Hello, I'm Roger, a volunteer reader at the Black Country Talking News. This week's edition is for Wednesday the 5th of August 2020.
Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightless Charity, Beacon Centre. I'm Simon. We are pleased to inform you that our Talking News service is now once again available in CD format. And to those who have received their CD in the post, you'll notice they're in paper envelopes, not the usual plastic wallets, so there's no need to send anything back. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Online by visiting Beacon's website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/on-air/podcasts. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, simply search Beacon Black Country Talking News and hit the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading this week, we have Christine, Mina, Ian, Helen, Flashback Roger, Angela, Pete, Sharon, and of course me, Simon. This week we have a roundup of local news, our weekly quiz, our flashback section where we look at this week in history. In sight loss news, we have a look at dating with sight loss with a blog from Sharon. We're off to the Mid Wales coast to drop in on Ian in his caravan. We have part one of a double bill when Laurel and Hardy visited the Black Country. Reports on Wolves and West Bromwich Albion. The weather for the weekend and next week. An update from Beacon. Plus a music quiz at the end. Now, what about last week's music quiz? Have you got the answers, Pete?
Yes, I have. And if you remember, we gave you some song titles at the end of last week's edition and missed a word out and asked you to guess the word or name the word. So the first song we did was from 1967. It was Keith West, an excerpt from a teenage opera. I didn't know that one. I've got to be honest. I didn't know that one. From 1968, it was Dusty Springfield. I close my eyes and count to 10 was the answer there. From 1969, Herman Hermits, My Sentimental Friend. And from 1970, The Four Tops, It's All in the Game. And finally, from 1971, Tony Christie and I Did What I Did for Maria. So those are the answers. Back to you, Simon.
Thanks, Pete. And thank you to Andy Coulson for sending in the questions as well. Now let's start with some local news from Ian and Angela, but first up, it's Christine.
Fire crews from across the region have been fighting a grass fire in Woodland near Stourbridge for 3 days. Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service crews have been stationed at Million Wood off Chester Road near Enville since Friday afternoon. Crews were first alerted to the fire just after 3 p.m. on Friday after it started in a heavily wooded area on one of the hottest days of the year. 5 fire engines and 25 firefighters were sent to help get the fire under control after 3.5 hectares of linden trees were caught up in the flames. A full fire break was put in place by the landowner with a tractor and water carriers from Cannock, a wildfire vehicle from Rugeley, and relief crews from Burton-on-Trent and Uttoxeter were on hand to help on Friday. And crews were still at the scene on Sunday morning, damping down the fire and checking for any hot spots. They were assisted by a Shropshire Fire and Rescue Service crew from Bridge North Station. A spokesman from Staffordshire Fire Service said they expected to be at the scene for the rest of Sunday. On Sunday afternoon, a tweet from the fire service said, "Our crews, with assistance from Shropshire Fire and Rescue Service Bridge North, continue to deal with the Woodland fire near Enville. Great assistance from the landowner has created additional fire breaks and additional access for our specialist wildfire appliances." A spokesman for the service said, It is still ongoing this morning, Sunday. We've got four appliances there. However, we also have a couple of Ranger 4x4s there too. Farm machinery was also in use. They are damping down at the scene and making sure it does not spread. We are planning to be there for all of Sunday into the evening.
Almost 4,000 people were injured on roads in the Black Country and Staffordshire last year, with safety chiefs calling for more police funding to tackle dangerous roads. National road safety charity Brake said that police forces' ability to tackle dangerous driving has been decimated by funding cuts in recent years. A total of 2,661 people were hurt in the Black Country on the region's roads, figures from the Department of Transport have shown. West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner and former Road Safety Minister David Jamieson said, "We need to ensure that our roads are a safe place for all those who use them. It's concerning to see a rise nationally in deaths on our roads after a fall in recent years. Since my election, I have put road safety as one of my top priorities for West Midlands Police. Despite losing over 2,000 police officers due to government cuts in the West Midlands, our roads policing was singled out for praise by the Independent Police Inspectorate, which is testament to the excellent work our officers do to save lives and keep the roads safe. Unlike some other police forces, we have remained focused on road safety. It is essential that others do this as well. We know that effective roads policing saves lives and keeps us all safe."
Car dealership group Pendragon is making 1,800 redundancies and shutting 15 sites due to the coronavirus crisis. The group, which includes the Evans Howshaw, Strathzone and car store chains, has carried out a review of estates and operation and structure. There are Evans Howshaw dealerships in Shrewsbury, Stourbridge, Walsall, Warfield and Wolverhampton, and a Strathzone site in Wolverhampton. Pendragon is not saying which dealerships are at risk of closure at this stage or when the closures will take effect. It will be left with 150 dealerships across the country.
Pubs, bars and restaurants in Dudley can now apply for a temporary licence to place tables and chairs on the highway to extend their outdoor space. Temporary pavement licences are being introduced across the country to help businesses with social distancing. It will allow pubs, restaurants and bars to safely extend their outdoor space if they can continue to adhere to social distancing guidelines. But the licence will cost £100 for businesses in the Dudley Borough. The fee is the same as it is being charged by many councils across the country, but some authorities, such as Wolverhampton Council, have reduced it to help ease the burden for businesses. Businesses which are granted a licence will be able to place counters, tables, seating and other items associated with the consumption of food and drink on the pavement during their operating hours, but not after 11 p.m.
Wolverhampton Council bosses say they remain fully committed to delivering a new city centre learning quarter as the wait for confirmation of funding for the £50 million project continues. The Wolverhampton City Learning Quarter is set to be built on the site of the former Faces nightclub at the corner of Bilston Street and Garrick Street, and will be the new home of the city's college, currently based on Paget Road. The scheme was given the green light at the end of last year, and early works have begun, but full funding for it has yet to be secured. A bid was submitted to funding body the Black Country Local Enterprise Partnership in June 2019, but the council has yet to receive a decision more than 12 months on. The project did get a boost earlier this week, however, when it emerged the City Council was set to bid for a share of the government's Towns Fund, out of which £10 million has been lined up for the learning quarter. It's also hoped more cash could come from the government, particularly after Boris Johnson's pledge to build, build, build during a recent speech in Dudley. It is expected the development will be ready for the college to move into in 2021, after which the ageing Paget Road site will be sold off.
More local news later, but now for an update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre here. How incredible that it's August already. It's certainly been a strange old year, and while some weeks have seemed like years, the months are certainly flying by. Now, As a lot of you will probably know, the government guidance around when you need to wear a face mask has changed in recent weeks. That now means that you need to wear one if you're visiting any of our shops. So far, our Sedgley store, Wolverhampton Clearance Centre and Penkridge shop are all open. And while our team can't wait to welcome you, please remember your face mask. We're always on the lookout for good quality donations, and if you would like to donate any items to our shops, please bring them in when we're open and don't leave them outside. It causes a hazard to others, and we need to know they've come from a COVID-19 symptom-free home. You can find out more about donating to our shops on our website, www.beaconvision.org/charity-shop-donations. Now, as you probably know by now, each week we pick a beacon of hope for our charity. It's normally someone who goes out of their way to do all they can to support Beacon, particularly given the last few months. So, we're delighted to tell you that our beacon of hope this week is one of our members, the lovely Leslie, who we're proud to say really is a much-loved member of the Beacon family. She's an inspiration to all of us at Beacon because she doesn't let the fact that she's registered blind stop her from doing what she loves. Leslie is a fantastic knitter and in recent weeks has had her knitting needles at the ready to raise some vital funds for Beacon. She's already knitted an amazing 36 scarves and has asked for people to sponsor her so she can say thank you for the support she's received from Beacon. Incredibly, in just a few days, she's already exceeded her initial target of £100, but we'd love to see even more supporters get behind her as she continues to raise funds for our charity, which is so close to her heart. It's a fantastic fundraising idea, and she's shown such dedication to carry on knitting. I know I'd be wanting a rest after finishing the first one. Thank you, Leslie, and to everyone who supported us so far. We love sharing these stories about our wonderful members. And if you would like to sponsor Leslie, you can head to her Just Giving page, www.justgiving.com/fundraising. Leslie's Knitathon, and the end is LeslieSKnitathon. Leslie's Knitathon. In other news, if you're looking for a fun family challenge this August, there's still time to sign up to the Prudential My Ride London Virtual Challenge and help raise money for Beacon Centre. Wherever you are, wherever your wheels are, you can choose to cover the 19, 46 or 100 mile ride, or you can sign up to the free cycle challenge and set your own distance. Sign up by visiting www.myridelondon.co.uk. You can make a donation or choose to raise as much sponsorship money as you can for Beacon. Either way, you'll become part of a Beacon team and the money raised will help us to continue our hard work supporting people living with sight loss. If you want to know more or have your own Beacon fundraising idea, get in touch. Drop us an email at supporters@beaconvision.org. That's all for this week. See you soon.
Thanks, Helen. And thank you to one of our lovely Talking News listeners, Leslie, for doing all that knitting. Now for some more local news, though, with Angela.
Transformation of land around former Wolverhampton Hospital is continuing to gather pace. The development in front of the old Royal Hospital in Wolverhampton is taking shape, breathing new life into a site which has been neglected for years. A total of 74 apartments and 18 homes are being built on the former site of the Cleveland Road bus depot in the latest part of an ambitious scheme to upgrade areas in and around the city centre. The historic Royal Hospital is also to be regenerated and will later be converted into homes for people aged over 55. Much of the iconic building, which dates back to 1848, will be preserved as a nod to its history. The completed site will also include a large open space and pedestrianised area. The new homes at the front of the site will be for sale, shared ownership and affordable rent.
Leisure centres across the Dudley Borough will be reopening gradually this week. Hales Owen and Stourbridge's Crystal Leisure Centres will be reopening their gyms and offer fitness classes and badminton as planned from Monday, with the pools to reopen on Thursday. The leisure pool at Crystal will remain closed. However, thorough site investigations and a review of the COVID-19 safety measures have led council bosses to take the decision to slightly delay the reopening of some facilities at Dudley Leisure Centre. Dudley will now reopen its pools, classes and for badminton on Thursday. Additional measures are being put in place before the gym at Dudley will reopen. Once the sites are open, due to the fact the swimming pools will be operating with reduced capacities in order to maintain social distancing, the free swimming for children offer will not be running over the summer holidays. Similarly, the leisure pool will not be open at Crystal following guidance from Swim England. Lane swimming will be put into operation at the 25-metre pool at Crystal and at Dudley and Hales Owen pools to manage capacity. Customers will need to pre-book sessions and pay online in advance, with cleaning taking place in between each session. The centres have been shut since March due to government restrictions imposed to control the coronavirus pandemic. The Dell Stadium in Brierley Hill reopened on Monday, the 27th of July.
Fire service bosses could have handled the row over the Black Country flag better, a council boss and fire authority member has said. West Midlands fire service stations were banned from flying the popular flag over the region's stations on Black Country Day over concerns the chains that feature on it could be linked to slavery. The service then performed a U-turn and changed its stance following a backlash from firefighters, politicians and the public, and said it would support use of the flag in future. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, who is head of health at Dudley Council and sits on the fire authority, admitted the row had been damaging for the fire service. The popular flag was designed by 12-year-old Gracie Shepherd in a competition, with many across the region taking it to their hearts. But its chains promoting the area's industrial heritage have been a source of controversy.
The long-delayed revamp of Wolverhampton Civic Halls has started after work was brought to a halt by the coronavirus pandemic, but they will not reopen until 2022. Council bosses also confirmed that new contractor, Wilmot Dixon Interiors, has now signed a main contract for the project. The City Council said a raft of on-site measures were in place to ensure workers were following safety guidance and now continue transforming the Grade 2 listed halls into top-class entertainment venue for audiences to enjoy for generations to come.
Paramedics treated a man who was injured after slipping on a roof at Into Merry Hill. Emergency services were called to Times Square near to Merry Hill bus station at around 2:15 p.m. on Wednesday the 29th of July. The man, a member of staff at Into Merry Hill, had fallen on the roof and was treated for injuries not believed to be serious. He was taken to Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley. Bosses at Into say the member of staff was carrying out maintenance work on the roof when he slipped. An Into Merry Hill spokesman said, "We are sorry to say that a member of our team was injured in a non-public area of the centre on Wednesday. They are currently recovering well in hospital and we will be supporting them during their recuperation. Safety is always our number one priority and we have already launched an investigation into the cause of the incident."
Three more local news bulletins to come, but now, is it you next, Mina?
Yes, it's me, Simon, with this week's quiz on events that happened on this week in history. And, as always, you will find the answers coming up with Roger in our flashback section later in this week's Black Country Talking News. Are you ready? Here we go. Question one. What unfortunate event happened during the Olympic Games in Berlin 1936? Question 2. Who was the model for the Statue of Liberty? Question 3. How did Wild Bill Hickok die? Question 4. Who celebrated their 100th birthday on 4th of August 2000? Question 5. What news did President Harry S. Truman announce from the cruiser USS Augusta on 6th of August 1945. And finally, question 6. Who famously resigned from office on the 8th of August 1974? The answer's coming up. Keep listening. If you miss them, we'll let you know all the answers again at the end of this week's edition. Good luck!
The answers coming up next in our flashback section. But first, let's return to some local news now with Ian.
A ban on drinking alcohol in public parts of Wolverhampton city centre has been extended for 3 more years. Members of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet agreed to the extension of the citywide public space protection order, which has been in operation in Wolverhampton since March 2017. The order gives police powers to stop people from drinking and to surrender alcohol if they cause or are likely to cause antisocial behaviour. The extension comes after a recent consultation found overwhelming support for the measures, which have helped bring about a 35% reduction in calls about incidents over the last 3 years.
Aldi is looking to hire 170 new staff in the West Midlands between now and Christmas, with salaries of up to £46,000. The UK's fifth largest supermarket is looking for people of all levels of experience to fill roles at its stores across the region, including from stock assistants all the way up to store managers. Among the sites in the region looking to hire are the stores in Dudley, Halesowen and Oldbury, which have 6 vacancies each. Aldi already employs more than 1,300 people at its 44 stores in the West Midlands, and is looking to grow its team over the coming months as part of its ongoing expansion plans in the region.
The heating system at Stourbridge's Crystal Leisure Centre is set to cost £200,000 more than planned, chiefs have said. Bosses at Dudley Council said the planned £600,000 new low-carbon system will instead cost £800,000. It comes amid rising costs due to issues with putting the pump in place and with drilling, chiefs have said. The project involves the drilling of a borehole to extract groundwater from which heat is extracted by heat pumps before it's returned to the ground through a second borehole. The decision to increase the budget for the project was backed by council bosses at a meeting last week. The scheme will generate income from the government's Renewable Heat Incentive, RHI, as well as saving on gas. The predicted savings are now estimated at £95,000 per year, having been previously estimated at £86,000. The increase being due to additional opportunities to reduce energy use.
Former Wolves Double League Championship and FA Cup winner Jerry Harris has died, aged 84. Claverley-born Harris spent almost his entire playing career at Molineux, making a total of 270 appearances for Wolves during the glory days of the 1950s and 1960s. A tough-tackling left-back, Harris spent 13 years in Gold and Black and was a key member of Stan Cullis's First Division title-winning sides of 1957-58 and 1958-59. He also played in the 1960 FA Cup final success against Blackburn, and appeared in every European game in the club's history. After leaving Wolves in 1966, following a decade in the first team, Harris played 15 times for Walsall before injury curtailed his career with the Saddlers. A keen supporter of Wolves in his later years, Harris, believed by many to be the best left-back in England never to win a full international cap, would regularly be seen at Molineux cheering on his beloved team, who would always hold a special place in his heart.
A multi-million pound transformation of Wolverhampton city centre will get back up and running, according to regeneration bosses, as Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet agreed to press on with phases 1 and 3 of its plans to create a new look centre. Phase 1 will focus on Victoria Street, while phase 3 covers North Street, where the Civic and Wolfing Halls are based, with the aim of creating public spaces and improving walking and cycling links and facilities. The work in Victoria Street is expected to cost £11.6 million, while the North Street revamp is estimated at £4.2 million. Wolverhampton Council bosses are waiting to see if it has been successful with the bid made to the government's future High Street Fund to progress the schemes.
More local news later, plus a catch-up with our local football clubs too. Now, what's it like dating with sight loss? Let's find out more.
Hi. Here's Sharon with another blog to share with all you listeners, and I hope that you like it and it'll give you a few giggles. I don't mind stating and starting this blog by telling you that I'm 54 years young, and since this is all about dating with sight loss, I will get straight to the point and admit I have not been in a serious relationship, and by that I mean living with someone, since I was 39 years old. I have been married and have two children, a daughter and son, who are now adults. My marriage lasted for 10 years, and I am happy to say that 20 years plus on, we are now friends and share our 6 grandchildren. After I got divorced, within a few years, I met someone new, as everyone tends to do. The relationship was very up and down, but it lasted for 7 years. We had cars, motorbikes. Yes, I had a Phaser 600 with all the trick bits on. I was a biker chick. And caravans and regular family holidays at weekends. In public, we were the average family, but behind closed doors, things were very different and difficult. After one particularly bad weekend, I packed a plastic washing basket of things and left. Why, I thought a plastic washing basket full of little trinkets would mean much, I don't know. I laugh about it now. So I was back with my parents, 2 children, 2 dogs, a rabbit and a pet rat of my daughter's called Oscar, crammed into a 1 bedroom on camp beds. But within 12 weeks, I got a council house and moved in with my 2 children. I had to start from scratch all over again. I had nothing, but we did it. I was 38 years old. For a few years, I concentrated into getting my house in order. My children were now teenagers. My friends were encouraging me to get on online dating apps or sites. I had heard of them and heard some good stories and quite a few bad ones. My folks didn't really like the idea of me meeting strangers, so I did what all sensible ladies start to do, and that's just chatting online. I held back quite a lot and went through pictures. My responses normally went along the lines of, he's okay, or, oh my God, no, or, what, no chance. The profiles were often all the same. Single man, own home, own car, good job, looking to settle down and enjoy the finer things in life with the right woman. But I was in my 40s, getting messages from guys in their 20s. I mean, what on earth would I have in common with a young pup? And the guys in their 60s and 70s, well, let's just say I wasn't ready for my pipe and slippers just yet. There were some dates and I would head out, just me and my cane, as I didn't have a guide dog then. Some of the stories I could tell you would make you laugh. There's this one guy. The first sentence he said to me when we sat down was, "I shave all over." I made my excuses pretty quickly that day, and the man who ended up dating the guy who served us at a pub. We all stayed friends though, so that had a happy ending. I will be honest, I have been out rarely for dates since having my guide dogs. Normally, on the first date, it's, "Oh, your dog is so cute, she's lovely. Yeah, bring her with you, I'll pick you up." The second date, it's usually, "Is the guide dog coming with us?" I've had complaints about dog hair in the car, offers for me to let the dog go, with them then driving me to work and home. No thanks, I like my independence. They soon went down the road. Another major issue when it comes to sight loss and dating is that meeting people is hard when you can't really see their faces. Unless I'm 2 inches away, and I'm sure a guy would think I was really weird if I said, "Oh, can I just come up to your face and see what you look like?" I know it's not all about looks. I remember my daughter taking me to a nightclub with the girls. They guided me around all night. To look at me, you wouldn't have thought that I had sight loss. I was approached by a tall chap who started chatting to me, and I thought, "Oh, He seems really nice. My daughter came over and whispered, "What are you doing talking to him? He seems nice," I said. "I can't see what he looks like, though. Does he look okay?" He whispered to me and apologised to the guy. Later on, she explained he had been trying to chat up many women all night at the club. So I am now 54. I have not dated anyone in 2 years. If you want to know why, I just haven't got the time or patience. I'm an independent woman. I don't really miss anything, and I'm not lonely or needy. I'm not looking for a hunter-gatherer type of man, and I'm not looking for a carer. I am happy being me, driving my life and living my life as it's so full. I am not saying I wouldn't ever have another relationship, but I will have to see where my life path takes me. Thanks for listening. Catch up soon. Bye.
We'll hear more from Sharon about her experiences of living with sight loss over the coming weeks, but now for our final look at the local news with Christine.
There have been many changes in life over the last 4 months, and now a town's residents and traders are getting used to a new one, the closure of its high street to traffic on Saturdays. The measures introduced in Bridgnorth have been brought in to allow more space for social distancing on High Street when market traders set up their stalls. The changes, which were in place for the second Saturday running, have seen the market stalls set back from the curbside, allowing more space for people to walk along the pavement. Richard and Jack Miller, both 72, who live in the town, said they enjoyed the continental ambience and said the council should consider making the change permanent.
A free no-ticket parking initiative on Dudley Council-owned car parks has now come to an end, residents are being reminded. The initiative was put in place as a temporary measure at the start of lockdown and extended until the end of July to help frontline staff who still needed to travel to work. It has now reverted back to 2 hours free parking on council car parks during the day. Motorists will have to get a ticket from machines, as per the previous arrangements, to cover their 2 hours free parking.
Cineworld Wolverhampton has reopened following major refurbishment. The cinema has expanded its existing offering, introducing 4DX, ScreenX and SuperScreen auditoriums, as well as an on-site Starbucks. Cinema-goers in the city will be able to enjoy the 4D experience, simulating the senses through its effects such as wind, water, scene and high-tech motion seats. ScreenX is the world's first multi-projection cinema technology that expands the cinema screen to the side of the auditorium walls, creating a 270-degree movie viewing experience that surrounds the audience in their seat. Guests can also superside their experience in SuperScreen with multidimensional Dolby Atmos sound and 4K film projection on a massive wall-to-wall and ceiling-high screen, which is taller than a double-decker bus.
A council leader has backed a campaign to keep radio presenter Dickie Dodd on the air amid fears his position could be axed. Councillor Ian Brookfield, leader of Wolverhampton Council, said the Signal 107 breakfast show host was a treasure of the city and needed to be kept. It comes following a rebrand of the station into the Hits Radio Network. The move has seen a petition set up, and City MP Pat McFadden writing to station owners Bauer asking them to keep him on the air. Councillor Brookfield said, "I've known Dickie for more than 20 years and what he does for this city goes above and beyond what many other people do. I've personally signed the petition and I would urge other people to do so as well. We can't lose a Wolverhampton treasure." The presenter, who was born in the city and went to Wensfield High School, starred in Grand Theatre's pantomime Dick Whittington in January this year.
It may be a strange time to open a new pub, but staff at the Cross Inn say they're excited and prepared for business amid the unprecedented times. The Wetherspoons pub is now open to the general public in High Street, King's Wynford, after a £2.5 million refurbishment. The opening has been delayed 4 months due to the coronavirus pandemic, but 70 jobs are now being created. It will open on the site of a former pub called The Cross, which is a Grade 2 listed building, which has been located on the corner of High Street and Moss Grove for at least 200 years. It will open with a range of safety measures in place in line with government guidance, which will see shields placed between customers and social distancing enforced.
Our sports roundup coming shortly. You'll find the answers to the quiz questions from earlier now, though, so it's a double header with Pete. But first up, Flashback Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we'll look at events that happened this week in history and where you will find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On August the 1st, during the opening ceremonies of the 1936 Olympics, known as Hitler's Games, thousands of pigeons were released. When a ceremonial cannon was fired, it startled the pigeons, causing them to poop all over the spectators below. Now, I've seen footage of that, and I thought the crowd were just saluting Hitler, but they may have been just trying to shoo away the pigeons. Also on August the 1st, again with the Olympics, in 1936, Germany began broadcasting the 1936 Olympic Games on TV. The games were transmitted from Paul Nipkow's TV station to about 24 viewing rooms set up around Berlin. It's estimated that 150,000 people watched the broadcasts. On August 2nd, 1834, French sculptor Frederick Auguste Bartholdi was born. He designed the Statue of Liberty, and his mother was the model. The statue marked the Franco-American alliance of 1778. On August 2, 1837, Wild Bill Hickok, whose real name was James Butler Hickok, was born. This American frontiersman, U.S. Marshal and famous citizen of Deadwood, South Dakota, was shot in the back of the head during a poker game in 1876, while reportedly holding two pairs, black aces and black eights, since known as Dead Man's Hand. The man who shot him had lost heavily while playing poker with Hickok and others the previous day. Hickok usually sat with his back to the wall so he could see the entrance, but when he joined the game, the only seat available was facing away from the door. He had asked the other man to change seats with him, but he refused.
Thank you, Roger. Now, on August the 2nd, 1990, Iraq invades Kuwait. More than 100,000 Iraqi soldiers, backed by up to 700 tanks, invaded the Gulf state of Kuwait in the early hours of the morning. On August the 3rd, in 1936, American sprinter Jesse Owens wins the 100 metres in 10.3 seconds in front of Adolf Hitler in a famous race at the Berlin Olympics again, first of four gold medals at the Games. On August the 4th, 2000, celebrations took place all over the United Kingdom to mark the 100th birthday of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother. The Queen Mother was the first member of the royal family to reach her centenary and was said to be quietly very pleased indeed to have achieved such a landmark birthday. On August the 5th, 1962, screen icon Marilyn Monroe was found dead at her Los Angeles home. The 36-year-old actress's body was discovered in the early hours of the morning by two doctors who were called to her Brentwood home by a concerned housekeeper. The doctors were forced to break in after being unable to open the door. She was found in her bed with an empty bottle of sleeping pills by her side. On August the 6th, 1945, the first atomic bomb was dropped by a United States aircraft on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. President Harry S. Truman, announcing the news from the cruiser USS Augusta in the mid-Atlantic, said the device was more than 2,000 times more powerful than the largest bomb used to date. On August the 7th, 1957, part of the great Laurel and Hardy duo, Oliver Hardy, passed away in North Carolina. He was 65 years old. And finally, on August the 8th, 1974, President Nixon resigns from office. Richard Nixon announced he was stepping down as President of the United States, the first man ever to do so. He announced his departure in the face of an imminent impeachment trial and possible removal from office over the Watergate affair. His successor, President Gerald Ford, issued an unconditional pardon in September 1974 for any offences Mr. Nixon might have committed as president, saving him from possible prosecution. Well, back to you, Roger.
Well, that's your lot for this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the quiz, and hope you get them all right. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Roger. We'll run through all the answers a bit later on if you missed any of them, so don't worry too much. But now, with news from our local football clubs, here's Ian.
Wolves have been denied another Europa League opportunity after Arsenal's victory over Chelsea in the FA Cup final. The Gunners won 2-1 at Wembley. It means Wolves' only way to guarantee European football again next season is to win this campaign's Europa League, which would grab a place in the Champions League. And Wolves could be given extra time off and start next season late if they progress into the latter stages of the Europa League. The 2020-21 Premier League season will start on Saturday, September the 12th, but English teams involved in the latter stages of European competition would see their opening fixtures postponed and played in midweek to catch up. Wolves play the second leg of their Europa League tie against Greek side Olympiacos at Molineux on Thursday the 6th of August with an 8 p.m. kickoff. Wolves have unveiled their home kit for the 2021 season. Still manufactured by Adidas with betting firm ManBetX as the sponsor, the new design most notably features black sleeves and large gold cuffs. There's also a chevron detailing on the shirt. The shorts are black with gold Adidas stripes, while the socks are gold with a black Adidas logo. Wolves have also unveiled the new home goalkeeper jersey, which is green with a black trim. Wolves are due to welcome back players who have been out on loan this season. Some may have played their way into a pre-season chance, while others appear to be in line for permanent moves away from Molineux. The players are Ryan Bennett, Leo Bonatini and Roderick Miranda, Dion Sanderson, goalkeeper Will Norris, Connor Ronan, Niall Ennis, Cameron John and Benny Ashley Seal. Meanwhile, Wolves are set to complete the signing of Villa goalkeeper Matija Sarpkic on a free transfer. The 22-year-old Montenegro international, whose contract at Villa Park expires at the end of this month, has been in talks with Wolves for more than a month and a deal is almost done. Aston Villa have appointed former Wolves assistant boss Johan Lange as the club's new sporting director. The 40-year-old joins Villa from FC Copenhagen. Lange, who was assistant to Ståle Solbakken during his brief reign at Molineux between 2012 and 2013. The pair then took over FC Copenhagen before Lange stepped up to the role of technical director at the Danish club in 2014. Under his watch, Copenhagen have enjoyed a period of domestic dominance while also earning a reputation for signing players on small fees before selling them for major profit. West Brom technical director Luke Dowling says Albion are working on signings who are ready to go straight into their starting 11. Having secured promotion to the Premier League, the Baggies are now actively trying to land their primary transfer targets to ensure they are as competitive as possible next season. Last year, Norwich, Sheffield United and Villa were all promoted and went on to operate with very different transfer strategies. Norwich have since been relegated after spending very little. Sheffield United finished ninth, having spent around £60 million, while Villa survived by a point despite spending around £140 million. Dowling has confirmed Albion won't be able to spend the vast sums Villa spent last summer, but he says the Baggies won't be following Norwich's frugal approach either. He insists Albion will continue to entertain and play attractive football in the Premier League because that is the way Slaven Bilic plays. But the technical director says the Baggies aren't naive enough to think they won't have to tailor their style when facing the division's heavyweights. Ever since Bilic took charge at the Hawthorns, Albion have played in a style that is pleasing on the eye, with the likes of Mateus Pereira and Grady Diangana given the freedom to flourish. Now, having won promotion back to the Premier League, the club is busy preparing for life back in what is arguably the world's toughest division. Dowling, though, says it's important Albion fans continue to be entertained. We will be playing the same type of football we played this year because that is how Slaven wants to play, the technical director said. We have to be sensible at times. We aren't going to go up against Man City and say let's go and play, because without being negative, we'll probably get beaten. We want to do it the right way and enjoy it. But we have also got a job to do, and that is to win as many football games as possible and stay in the league. But it will be enjoyable for our supporters to watch, I can guarantee that.
Now, Ian's away at the moment, so we recorded that piece from his caravan on the Mid Wales coast. Lucky him, eh? So let's go back to the seaside with Ian now and see what he's up to.
As I mentioned to you 2 weeks ago, I am recording my news items in my caravan on the Ceredigion coast in Wales at the moment. Today is another glorious day. I'm sitting on the decking of the caravan looking out at a deep blue sea and a slightly paler blue sky. And there is a gentle breeze which is very pleasant indeed. I want to tell you about a couple of things that have happened to me in the last fortnight. Last Thursday I drove 30 miles north of Aberystwyth to meet three friends of mine from home, and we climbed the mountain called Cader Idris. Although it's not one of the highest mountains in Wales, after Snowdon it's probably the one that most people in England have heard of. It's quite hard work. It took us about 5 hours to climb, but the weather was beautiful, sunshine and blue skies all day. We could see the coast and the Mawddach estuary near Barmouth. My friends are all keen rock climbers, and although I'm not, I did have a little climb myself. They were above me and told me where to put my hands and feet, so it was quite easy really. We had a brilliant day. On another day, I walked into Aberystwyth to meet my son Edward, who is a student here. We went into an ice cream shop on the seafront and bought ourselves a cornet each, salted caramel ice cream. We walked out of the shop eagerly anticipating eating our cornets, when all of a sudden, as we were crossing, a zebra crossing to the promenade, a seagull swooped like a fighter plane out of the sun and snatched my cornet out of my hand. For a few seconds, I just stood there dumbfounded, unsure what had happened, before watching a group of other seagulls fight each other over what was left of my cornet. Can you imagine how I felt? Anyway, I went back into the shop where I had bought the ice cream. As soon as I walked in, the lady who served me knew exactly what I was going to say. It happens so often, apparently. She kindly gave me a replacement ice cream, and this time we stayed in the shop to eat it. Not quite as nice as eating it on the promenade, but much safer. Finally, I owe an apology to the local badgers, whom I accused of digging up the turf and making a mess of the gravel under our decking. On closer inspection, I realised that the culprits were in fact moles and not badgers at all. I'm hoping that the local wildlife will leave us alone for a while now. From sunny Aberystwyth, it's goodbye from me.
Sounds nice, doesn't it? Well, all apart from the seagulls. Nice of the lady, though, to give him a free ice cream. I do love a free ice cream. It always tastes better if somebody else pays for it. That's what I find. Now, did you get any of the answers to the quiz? Let's run through them all now with Mina.
Hands up. Who got them all right? Are you sure? Well, let's go through the answers and see. Question 1. What unfortunate event happened during the Olympic Games in Berlin 1936? The answer here is pigeon startled by ceremonial cannon fire pooped on the spectators as they fled around the stadium. Oh gosh. Question 2. Who was the model for the Statue of Liberty? The answer here is the French sculptor's mother. Question 3. How did Wild Bill Hickok die? The answer here is he was shot in the back of his head. Question 4. Who celebrated their 100th birthday on 4th of August 2000? And of course, it's the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth. Question 5. What news did President Harry S. Truman announce from the cruiser USS Augusta on 6th of August 1945? The answer here is the first atomic bomb had been dropped by a United States aircraft on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. And finally, question 6. who famously resigned from office on the 8th of August 1974? The answer here is American President Richard Nixon over the Watergate affair. That was this week's quiz. I'm back in a minute with the weather forecast. But where did I put it? Simon, have you got my script?
I haven't got it. They don't trust me with that kind of information. You better keep looking, because you're on again in a minute. Now, did you know that arguably the greatest comedy duo of all time, Laurel and Hardy, visited the Black Country? Well, here's part of a double bill with Christine.
Are you going to do anything special while here? The interviewer asked. Oliver Hardy had just stepped off the liner Queen Elizabeth on his arrival in 1947 with Stan Laurel to do a tour of British shows. Well, he told the interviewer, try and keep the people happy. Stan, standing next to him, starts tapping on Ollie's shoulder. Will you keep quiet a minute, says Ollie, before turning back to the interviewer. And have a good time, and everyone else have a good time. Stan taps again. I'm talking to the gentleman. Will you keep quiet a moment? Barks Ollie. And then after a couple of weeks, we might... Stan is urgently tapping again. What is it? Says an exasperated Ollie. You're standing on my foot, says Stan. Classic Laurel and Hardy, and an old routine which was vintage Stan Laurel, because he was the comedy brains behind the duo, writing all the material, and that was just fine by Ollie. Their slapstick and gags have brought laughter cascading down the generations. One of those partnerships sprinkled with magic dust, with many regarding them as the greatest comedy duo of all time. That's another fine mess you've got us into, has become a standard quote, although Hardy's words were actually nice mess. Stan was born Arthur Stanley Jefferson on June 16th in 1890 in Ulverston, which at the time was in Lancashire but is now in Cumbria. While it's gone down in the history books that he was from Ulverston, he apparently saw himself as a Geordie because he spent most of his childhood in North Shields, and for a long time it was thought that he'd been born in the North East until somebody found his birth certificate. The family later moved to Glasgow. His father was an actor and theatre manager and took over the lease of the Metropole Theatre in the city. It was in Glasgow that 16-year-old Stan made his stage debut. He went to America on tour with Fred Karno's troupe, of which Charlie Chaplin was also a member, before going into films, although it was to be years before he teamed up with Oliver Babe Hardy with a comedy formula of Two Minds Without a Single Thought, with the antics of Simpleton Stan and Pompous Ollie creating situations which would spiral into chaos. Their first official pairing was in a 1927 silent movie, but they moved seamlessly into the talkies era, working together on over 100 shorts and feature films. They are today hailed as comedy legends, while the sentimentality and pathos of Chaplin has not fared so well with modern audiences. Stan actually forgot how the stage name of Laurel came to him, but told one interviewer that he had a vague idea it had happened in 1918, and also remembered that his impelling reason to seek a new name was superstition, because Stan Jefferson was 13 letters. According to Australian singer and dancer May Charlotte Dahlberg, with whom he had an early double act, she was also his common-law wife, she saw a book left in a dressing room showing a Roman wearing a laurel wreath around his head, aired it aloud as she knew he was looking for a new name, and he thought it sounded good. After Laurel and Hardy's huge success, they came to Britain after the war with some trepidation, fearing they were a forgotten act, and were amazed at their enthusiastic reception. After the 1947 triumph, there were to be further British tours in 1952, 1953 and 1954. Laurel and Hardy did several shows in this region at the Wolverhampton Hippodrome, the Dudley Hippodrome and the Granada Theatre, Shrewsbury.
Thanks, Christine. We'll have part two for you in the next few weeks when we look back at the shows Laurel and Hardy did in the Black Country. Now, in the meantime, that weather. Have you found it yet, Mina?
Yes, I found it. And it looks like warm weather ahead with little rain around. The sun and sunrise times for next week are: the sunrise will be at 5:40 a.m. and sunset at 20:46 p.m. Now on Friday 7th of August, we are looking at sunny intervals with a gentle breeze and a maximum temperature, wait, a whopping 29 degrees. Wow. So just like last Friday, it's going to be hot. And be careful with the high pollen and high UV levels. On Saturday 8th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 26 degrees. Now I think I'm going to enjoy the weather this week with high UV levels too. Sunday 9th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees, medium UV levels. Moving on to Monday 10th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees and again, medium UV levels. Tuesday 11th of August, we have again sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees and medium UV levels. Wednesday 12th of August, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 26 degrees and UV levels again at medium. And finally, Thursday 13th of August, again we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees and medium UV levels. Enjoy the weather, but please do protect your eyes, wear those sun hats, sun cream, and if it rains, don't forget your brolly. Enjoy the weather.
I will, and thank you, Mina. Now, what shall we end with this week? It's over to you, Pete.
And to finish this week, we have a slightly different music quiz sent in from Andy Coulson still. Andy's testing us this week. So I've got three questions for you, and we'll give you the answers next week. So let's see how you get on with these, okay? Question one. In 1964, which group sang about Mockingbird Hill? Okay, question one. In 1964, which group sang about Mockingbird Hill? Question two. We're really testing you on these this week. In 1956, The Ballad of Davy Crockett was a top three hit for Bill who? That was part one of the question. And part two, it was a top three cover by Tennessee Ernie who? Okay, so in 1956, The Ballad of Davy Crockett was a top three hit for Bill who? And it was also a top three cover by Tennessee Ernie who? Okay, that's question two. And our third and final question. In 1957, name both male performers to have a number one with Singing the Blues. One was British, one was American. So in 1957, name both male performers to have a number one with Singing the Blues. One British, one American. Thank you, Andy, for sending them in. And we'll give you the answers next week. Back to you, Simon.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org. or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!